distant, as though he has more important things to do. Investigate each of your proof of truth statements using all four questions and the turnarounds, as in the following example. 1. He sometimes walks by me without speaking. That proves that he doesn't love me. Is it true? Can I absolutely know that it's true? Is it possible that he is mentally absorbed in something else? Continue with all four questions and the turnarounds. 2. When I enter the room, he doesn't look up. That proves that he doesn't love me. Is it true? Can I absolutely know that it means he doesn't love me? Continue to test your proof with all four questions and the turnarounds. Test your whole list in this manner, and then return to your original inquiry. I'm saddened by Paul because he doesn't love me. Is it true? Finding your proof of truth. Think of a person in your life, past or present, who you think doesn't love you. Then make a list of your proof that it's true. Now investigate each proof of truth statement you have written down using all four questions and the turnarounds. Question 3. How do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? With this question, we begin to notice internal cause and effect. You can see that when you believe the thought, there is an uneasy feeling, a disturbance that can range from mild discomfort to fear or panic. Since you may have realized from question 1 that the thought isn't even true for you, you're looking at the power of a lie. Your nature is truth, and when you oppose it, you don't feel like yourself. Stress never feels as natural as peace does. After the four questions found me, I would notice thoughts like, people should be more loving, and I would see that they caused a feeling of uneasiness. I noticed that prior to the thought, there was peace. My mind was quiet and serene. There was no stress, no disturbing physical reaction. This is who I am without my story. Then in the stillness of awareness, I began to notice the feelings that came from believing or attaching to the thought. And in the stillness, I could see that if I were to believe the thought, the result would be a feeling of unease and sadness. From there, it would go to, I should do something about this. From there, it would shift to guilt. I didn't have the slightest idea of how to make people be more loving, because I myself couldn't be more loving than I, in fact, was. When I asked, how do I react when I believe the thought that people should be more loving? I saw that not only did I have an uncomfortable feeling, this was obvious, but I also reacted with mental pictures of the wrongs I had once thought I'd suffered, of the terrible things I had once thought people had done to me, of my first husband's unkindness to our children and me, to prove that the thought was true. I flew off into a world that didn't exist. There I was, sitting in a chair with a cup of tea, and mentally I was living in the pictures of an illusory past. I became a character in the pages of a myth of suffering, the heroine of suffering, trapped in a world filled with injustice. I reacted by living in a stressed body, seeing everything through fearful eyes. A sleepwalker, someone in an endless nightmare. The remedy was simply to investigate. I love question 3. Once you answer it for yourself, once you see the cause and effect of a thought, all your suffering begins to unravel. You may not even realize it at first. You may not even know that you're making progress. But progress is none of your business. Just keep doing the work. It will continue to take you deeper. The next time the problem you worked on appears, you may laugh in astonishment. You may not feel any stress. You may not even notice the thought at all. Can you see a reason to drop that thought? And please don't try to drop it. This is an additional question that I sometimes ask as a follow-up to question 3 because it can bring radical shifts in awareness. Along with the next additional question, it goes deeper into an awareness of internal cause and effect. Can I see a reason to drop the thought? Yes, I can. I was at peace before the thought appeared, and after it appeared, I felt contraction and stress. It's important to realize that inquiry is about noticing, not about dropping the thought. That is not possible. If you think that I'm asking you to drop the thought, hear this, I'm not. Inquiry is not about getting rid of thoughts. It's about realizing what's true for you through awareness and unconditional self-love. Once you see the truth, the thought lets go of you, not the other way around. Can you find one stress-free reason to keep the thought? Another question I sometimes ask is, can you find one stress-free reason to keep the thought? You may see lots of reasons, but they all cause stress. They all hurt. None of them is peaceful or valid, not if you're interested in putting an end to your suffering. If you find one that seems valid, ask yourself, is this reason peaceful or is it stressful? Does thinking that thought bring peace or stress into your life? And do I operate more efficiently, lovingly, and clearly when I am stressed or when I am free of stress? In my experience, all stress is inefficient. Question 4. Who would you be without the thought? This is a very powerful question. Picture yourself standing in the presence of the person you have written about when they're doing what you think they shouldn't be doing. Now, just for a minute or two, close your eyes, take a deep breath, and imagine who you would be if you didn't have even the ability to think this thought. How would your life be different in the same situation without this thought? Keep your eyes closed and watch them without your story. What do you see? How do you feel about them without the story? Which do you prefer, with or without your story? Which feels kinder? Which feels more peaceful? For many people, life without their story is literally unimaginable. They have no reference for it. So I don't know is a common answer to this question. Other people answer by saying, I'd be free, I'd be peaceful, I'd be a more loving person. You could also say, I'd be clear enough to understand the situation and act efficiently. Without our stories, we are not only able to act clearly and fearlessly, we're also a friend, a listener. We are people living happy lives. We are appreciation and gratitude that have become as natural as breath itself. Happiness is a natural state for someone who knows that there's nothing to know and that we already have everything we need right here, now. The answer to question 3 may leave us without an identity. This is very exciting. You're left with nothing and as nothing other than the reality of the moment. Woman sitting in a chair, writing. This can be a little scary since it leaves no illusion of a past or future. You might ask, how do I live now? What do I do? Nothing is meaningful. And I would say, with no past or future, you won't know how to live. Can you really know that that's true? You don't know what to do, and nothing is meaningful. Can you really know that that's true? Write down your fears and walk yourself through inquiry again on these subtle, intricate concepts. The goal of inquiry is to bring us back to our right mind so we can realize for ourselves that we live in paradise and haven't even noticed. Who would you be without the thought is the form of question 4 that I suggest if you're new to the work. I invite people to phrase the question in another way as well. Who or what would you be without the thought? Sit with it. Let any thoughts or pictures come and go as you contemplate this form of the question. It can be an extremely rich experience. You may also want to play with the original form of question 4. What would you be without the thought? Peace is the answer that people often come to. And again I ask, what would you be without even that thought? The turnarounds. The turnarounds are a very powerful part of the work. It's the part where you take what you have written about others and see if it is as true or truer when it applies to you. As long as you think that the cause of your problem is out there, as long as you think that anyone or anything else is responsible for your suffering, the situation is hopeless. It means that you are forever in the role of the victim, that you are suffering in paradise. So bring the truth home to yourself and begin to set yourself free. Inquiry combined with the turnarounds is the fast track to self-realization. For example, the statement, "Paul is unkind," turns around to, "I am unkind." Go inside and find the situations in your life where this seems true for you. Have you also been unkind to Paul? Look at your answers to the question, how do you react when you think the thought, Paul is unkind? How do you treat him? Aren't you being unkind in the moment when you are seeing Paul as unkind? Experience what it feels like when you believe that Paul is unkind. Your body may tense, your heart may speed up, you may feel flushed. Is that kind to yourself? You may get judgmental and defensive. How does that feel inside you? Those reactions are the results of your uninvestigated thinking. When Paul insults you, for example, how many times do you replay that scene in your mind? Who is more unkind, Paul, who insulted you once today, or you, who multiplied his insult over and over again in your mind? Consider this. Were your feelings the result of Paul's action itself or your judgments about it? If Paul insulted you and you didn't know about it, would you suffer? Be still for a moment. Go deep. Stay vigilantly in your own mental business as you sit with this. The three types of turnaround. There are three ways to do the turnaround. A judgment can be turned around to yourself, to the other, and to the opposite. There are many possible combinations of these three to play with. The point is not to find the most turnarounds, but to find the ones that set you free from the nightmare you're innocently attached to. Turn the original statement around any way you want to until you find the turnarounds that penetrate the deepest. Let's play with the statement, Paul should appreciate me. First, turn it around to yourself. I should appreciate myself. It's my job, not his. Next, turn it around to the other. I should appreciate Paul. If I believe it's so easy for Paul to appreciate me, can I appreciate Paul? Can I live it? Then turn it around to the opposite. Paul shouldn't appreciate me. That's reality sometimes. Paul shouldn't appreciate me unless he does. Be willing to go inside with each turnaround and ask if it's as true as or truer than the original statement. Find at least three specific genuine examples of how it is true in your life. Own it. If that seems difficult for you, add the word sometimes to the turnaround. Can you own that it's true sometimes, even if only in the moment, that you are thinking that is true about the other? Now list three examples in your life where the turnarounds are true. For example, name three ways you haven't appreciated yourself. Name three ways you haven't appreciated Paul. Name three ways that Paul has appreciated you. This completes the turnarounds. I suggest that you always use the four questions before applying the turnarounds. You may be tempted to take a shortcut and skip to the turnarounds without putting your statement up against inquiry first. This is not an effective way of using the turnarounds. Without the questions first, the turnarounds can feel harsh and shameful. The feeling of judgment turned back onto yourself can be brutal if it occurs prior to thorough self-education. And the four questions give you this education. They end the ignorance of what you believe to be true, and the turnarounds in the last position feel gentle and make sense. By asking the four questions first and going inside for the answers, you'll make it possible to experience the turnarounds as revelations rather than mental gymnastics. The work is not about shame and blame. It's not about proving that you are the one in the wrong or forcing yourself to believe that someone else is in the right. The power of the turnaround lies in the discovery that everything you think you see on the outside is really a projection of your own mind. Everything is a mirror image of your own thinking. Once you have learned to go in for your own answers and open yourself up to the turnarounds, you'll experience this for yourself. In discovering the innocence of the person you judged, you'll come to recognize your own innocence. Sometimes you may not find the turnaround in your behavior or actions. If that's the case, look for it in your thinking. For example, the turnaround for Paul should stop smoking is, I should stop smoking. Perhaps you have never smoked a single cigarette in your life. It may be that where you are smoking is in your mind. Over and over you smoke with anger and frustration as you picture Paul smelling up your house with cigarette smoke. Do you mentally smoke more times in a day than Paul does? Your prescription for peace, then, is for you to stop smoking in your mind and to stop being so smoking angry about Paul's smoking. Another suggestion is to substitute something else for the word smoking. Maybe you've never smoked, but is there something that you use in the same way that you think Paul uses cigarettes? Food, drugs, credit cards, relationships? Your turnaround could be, I should stop using credit cards to make myself feel better. Be willing to take the advice that you're giving him, the advice that shows you how to live in your own business. The turnarounds in action. Self-realization is not complete until it lives as action. Live the turnarounds. When you see how you have been preaching to others, go back and make amends and let them know how difficult it is for you to do what you wanted them to do. Let them know the ways that you manipulated and conned them, how you got angry, used sex, used money, and used guilt to get what you wanted. I wasn't always able to live the advice that I so generously held out for others to live. When I realized this, I found myself on equal ground with the people I had judged. I saw that my philosophy wasn't so easy for any of us to live. I saw that we're all doing the best we can. This is how a lifetime of humility begins. Reporting is another powerful way I found to manifest self-realization. In the first year after I woke up to reality, I often went to the people I had been judging and shared my turnarounds and realizations. I reported only what I had discovered about my part in whatever difficulty I was experiencing. Under no circumstances did I talk about their part. I did this so that I could hear it in the presence of at least two witnesses, the other person and myself. I gave it and I received it. If, for example, your statement was, he lied to me, one turnaround would be, I lied to him. Now you list as many of your lies as you can remember and report them to that person, never in any way mentioning his lies to you. His lies are his business. You are doing this for your own freedom. Humility is the true resting place. When I wanted to move even faster and more freely, I found that apologizing and making heartfelt amends was a wonderful shortcut. To make amends means to right the perceived wrong. What I call living amends is more far-reaching. It applies not only to one particular incident, but to all future incidents of that kind. When I realized through inquiry that I had hurt someone in my past, I stopped hurting anyone. If even after this I hurt someone, I told them immediately why I did it, what I was afraid of losing, or what I wanted to get from them, and I began again, always with a clean slate. This is a powerful way to live freely. A heartfelt apology is a way to undo an error and begin again on an equal and guiltless basis. Apologize and make amends for your own sake. It's all about your own peace. What good is it to be a talking saint? We've got an earth full of them. Peace is who you really are. Without a story, can you just live it? Go through your list of examples of how the turnarounds are true for you and underline each statement where you feel that you harmed someone in any way. Your list of answers to question 3, how do you react? How do you treat them when you believe that thought? Could keep you very busy with reporting and apologizing. Make amends to yourself by making amends to others. Give back an equal measure what you believe you took at their expense. Honest, non-manipulative reporting, coupled with living amends, brings real intimacy to otherwise impossible relationships. If any people on your worksheet are dead, make living amends through the rest of us. Give us what you would have given them, for your own sake. I knew a man who was very serious about his freedom. He'd been a junkie and a thief, had broken into many houses, and had been very good at what he did. After he had been doing the work for a while, he made a list of everyone he had ever stolen from and what he had taken, as exactly as he could remember. When he finished the list, there were dozens of people and houses on it. And then he began to turn it around. He knew he would end up in jail, and yet he had to do what was right for him. He went house by house and knocked on each door. He was African American, and some of the places he returned to were not very comfortable for him because he had beliefs about prejudice. But he just kept working with them and knocking on the doors. When people answered, he would tell them who he was and what he had stolen. Then he would apologize and say, "How can I make this right? I'll do whatever it takes." And no one ever called the police. They would say things like, "Okay, fix my car," or "paint my house." And he would do the job with pleasure and then put a check mark by their name on his list. And every stroke of the paintbrush, he said, was God, God, God. I have a son, Ross, who has been doing the work for a long time. 8 or 9 years ago, I noticed that, as we shopped, he would sometimes say, "Wait for me, Mom, I'll be right back," and leave me for 10 minutes or so. On one occasion, I watched him through the store window choose a shirt, take it to the cashier, and pay for it. Then he went back to the shelf, looked around to make sure that no one was watching, put the shirt back, and walked out of the store. I asked him what he was doing. He said, "A while ago, I stole things from 5 or 6 stores. It was horrible, Mom. Now when I see a store where I stole something, I walk in, find an item like the one I stole, pay for it, and put it back. I tried turning myself in. I say, 'Here's the money for what I stole, and if you want to prosecute, it's okay with me.' And they'd get confused. They'd call in the manager, and the manager wouldn't know what to do with the money. He'd tell me that it was too complicated for the computers. And if they called the police would say that you have to be caught in the act. So they'd end up telling me that there was nothing they could do. But I really needed to turn it around. So I found this way. It works for me." Ross also likes to play with an exercise that I recommend, which is to do a kind act and not get found out. If you're found out, the act doesn't count, and you start over. I have seen him at amusement parks watch children who don't seem to have enough money. He'll pull out a bill from his wallet, stoop down in front of the child, pretend to pick it up from the ground, and hand it to him, saying, You drop this dude, then quickly walk away without ever looking back. He's an amazing teacher of how to practice the turnaround through living amends. It's generous to yourself to bring this practice into everyday life, and the results are nothing short of miraculous. The turnaround for Statement 6. The turnaround for Statement 6 on the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet is a bit different from the others. We change "I don't ever want to "I'm willing to" and "I look forward to." For example, "I don't ever want Paul to lie to me again" turns around to "I am willing to have Paul lie to me again, and I look forward to having Paul lie to me again." This turnaround is about embracing all of life. Saying and meaning "I am willing to" creates open-mindedness, creativity, and flexibility. Any resistance you may have is softened, and that allows you to open up to the situation in your life rather than keep hopelessly applying willpower to eradicate it or keep it away. Saying and meaning "I look forward to" actively opens you to life as it unfolds. Some of us have learned to accept what is, and I am here to invite you to go further, to actually love what is. This is our natural state. Freedom is our birthright. For example, "I don't ever want to live with Paul if he doesn't change" turns around to "I'm willing to live with Paul if he doesn't change, and I look forward to living with Paul if he doesn't change." You may as well look forward to it. You could find yourself living with him, if only in your mind. I have worked with people still bitter, even though their mate has been dead for 20 years. Whether you live with him or not, you will probably have this thought again, and you may feel the resulting stress and depression. Look forward to these feelings. They're reminders that it's time to wake yourself up. Uncomfortable feelings will bring you right back to the work. This doesn't mean that you have to live with Paul. It just means that you are no longer closing yourself off from reality. Willingness opens the door to all of life's possibilities. Here are two more examples from our sample worksheet. Original Statement 6. "I refuse to watch Paul ruin his health." Turnarounds: "I'm willing to watch Paul ruin his health. I look forward to watching Paul ruin his health." Original Statement 6. "I don't ever want to be ignored by Paul again." Turnarounds: "I'm willing to be ignored by Paul again. I look forward to being ignored by Paul again." It's good to acknowledge that the same feelings or situation may happen again, if only in your thoughts. When you realize that suffering and discomfort are the call to inquiry and to the freedom that follows, you may actually begin to look forward to uncomfortable feelings. You may even experience them as friends coming to show you what you have not yet investigated thoroughly enough. It's no longer necessary to wait for people or situations to change in order to experience peace and harmony. The work is the direct way to orchestrate your own happiness. No one can hurt me. That's my job. Chapter 6. Doing the Work on Work and Money. For some of us, life is controlled by our thoughts about work and money. But if our thinking is clear, how could work or money be the problem? Our thinking is all we need to change. It's all we can change. This is very good news. Many of us are motivated by a desire for success. But what is success? What do we want to achieve? We do only three things in life. We stand, we sit, we lie horizontal. Once we found success, we'll still be sitting somewhere until we stand, and we'll stand until we lie down or sit again. Success is a concept, an illusion. Do you want the $3,900 chair instead of the $39 one? Well, sitting is sitting. Without a story, we're successful wherever we are. Doing the work on job-related issues can have far-reaching consequences. When I work in corporations, I sometimes invite all the employees to judge each other. This is what employees and bosses have always wanted, to know how they look from each other's point of view. And then, after the judgments, they all do the work and turn it around. The results can be a startling increase in clarity, honesty, and responsibility. And this, in turn, inevitably leads to a happier, more productive, and more efficient workforce. I once did the work with an executive who said, "My assistant has been with me for 10 years. I know she doesn't do the job well, but she has 5 children." I said, "Good, keep her here so she can teach the rest of your employees that if they have enough children, they can work for you, whether they do their job well or not." And he said, "Well, I just can't fire her." I said, "I understand that. So put someone qualified in her position, send her home to her 5 children who need her, and send her a paycheck every month. That's more honest than what you're doing now. Guilt is expensive." When the executive read his worksheet to the woman, she agreed with every single thing he had written about her job performance, because it was clear and true. And I said to her, "What do you suggest? What would you do if you were your employee?" People usually fire themselves when they realize what's going on, and that's just what she did. She found a similar job in another company, closer to her home, where she was able to be both a good assistant and a good mother. The executive realized that he had never investigated the thoughts that led him to be loyal to an assistant who, in reality, had been just as uncomfortable with the situation as he was. I've never seen a work or money problem that didn't turn out to be a thinking problem. I used to believe that I needed money to be happy. Even when I had a lot, I was often sick with the fear that something terrible would happen and I would lose it. I realize now that no amount of money is worth that kind of stress. If you live with the uninvestigated thought, "I need my money to be safe and secure," you're living in a hopeless state of mind. Banks fail, stock markets crash, currencies deflate, people lie, bend contracts, and break their promises. In this confused state of mind, you can make millions of dollars and still be insecure and unhappy. Some people believe that fear and stress are what motivate them to make money. But can you really know that that's true? Can you be absolutely certain that without fear or stress as a motivator, you wouldn't have made the same money or even more? I need fear and stress to motivate me. Who would you be if you never believed that story again? After I found the work inside myself, after it found me, I began to notice that I always had the perfect amount of money for me right now, even when I had little or none. Happiness is a clear mind. A clear and sane mind knows how to live, how to work, what emails to send, what phone calls to make, and what to do to create what it wants without fear. Who would you be without the thought, "I need my money to be safe"? You might be a lot easier to be with. You might even begin to notice the laws of generosity, the laws of letting money go out fearlessly and come back fearlessly. You don't ever need more money than you have. When you understand this, you begin to realize that you already have all the security you wanted money to give you in the first place. It's a lot easier to make money from this position. Just as we use stress and fear to motivate ourselves to make money, we often rely on anger and frustration to move us to social activism. If I want to act sanely and effectively while I clean up the Earth's environment, let me begin by cleaning up my own environment. All the trash and pollution in my thinking, let me clean that up by meeting it with love and understanding. Then my action can become truly effective. It takes just one person to help the planet. That one is you. When I work in prisons, there will be maybe 200 men from a cell block sitting there, looking down at the floor with their arms folded across their chests. I do the work with them, and then the guards bring in another 200. These are all hardcore, violent men. Many of them are in prison with life sentences for rape and murder, and I'm the only woman in the room. I don't say a word until they make eye contact with me. This is not easy for them to do. There is some kind of unspoken code that they have to keep people like me out of their culture. But I just stand in front of them, waiting for eye contact. I may walk into the rows and pace slowly up and down as I wait for just one man to look me in the eyes. The moment it happens, the moment one man does that, he always looks down, really fast, but it's too late. There was contact. No one but me has seen his glance. It happens so fast that there's no way the others can see that it happened. And yet, immediately, the code begins to break down all over the room. Two or three others look me in the eyes, then another eight, then another dozen, and then everyone is looking at me, laughing, turning red, and saying things to one another like, "Man, she's crazy." And it's done. Now I can speak to them and give them the work, and all because one man dared to look me in the eyes. I love thanking these men for sacrificing their entire lives to teach our children how not to live, and therefore how to live, if they want to be free. I tell them that they are the greatest teachers and that their lives are good and needed. Before I leave, I ask them, would you spend the rest of your life in prison if you knew that it would keep one child from having to live what you're living? And many of these violent men understand, and they just well up with tears like sweet little boys. There is nothing we can do that doesn't help the planet. That's the way it really is. He's so incompetent. Gary is annoyed by his incompetent employee. Is the person who annoys you someone you work with? Or is it your spouse or your children who didn't do the dishes thoroughly enough or who have left toothpaste on the bathroom sink? See if you can find an example in your life and go inside for your own answers as Gary goes inside for his.
I'm angry at Frank because he is incompetent when he works for me.
Okay, Frank should be competent. Is it true?
I think so.
Can you absolutely know that it's true? Whoever told you that? His resume said competent. His recommendation said competent. It's all over the place. You hire him, and he's supposed to be competent. What's the reality of it? In your experience, is he?
In my experience, he's not.
So that's the only place you can sanely come from. Reality. Is it true that he should be competent? No, he's not. That's it. That's your reality. So we can keep going over this until we get the is it true thing, because when you understand this, you become a lover of reality and move into balance. How do you react when you believe the lie that he should be competent when he works for you and he's not?
It's frustrating and anxiety-producing. I feel like I have to carry his work. I have to clean up behind him every time. I can't leave him alone to do his work.
Can you see a reason to drop the thought that he should be competent, and I'm not asking you to drop it?
It would make me feel better if I could drop it.
That's a very good reason. Can you find one stress-free reason to keep this thought that opposes reality?
Yes. I don't see what you mean by opposes reality.
The reality, as you see it, is that he's not competent. You're saying he should be. That theory is not working for you because it opposes reality. I hear you say that it causes you frustration and anxiety.
Okay, I think I'm pulling this apart. The reality is that he's just not competent. What's making me crazy is thinking he's supposed to be, rather than just accepting it.
He's incompetent whether you accept it or not. Reality doesn't wait for our agreement or approval. It is what it is. You can count on it.
Reality is what is.
Yes. Reality is always much kinder than the fantasy. You can have a lot of fun at home with what are referred to as the proof of truth exercise. He should be competent. Where's your proof? Make a list and see if any of it really proves that he should be competent when you put it up against inquiry. It's all a lie. There is no proof. The truth is that he should not be competent because he's just not competent for that job.
The fact is that he's not competent, and I do what I have to do to make up for it. What I don't need to give myself is the extra baggage of he should be yada, yada, yada.
Very well said.
All my job-related angst was about thinking that Frank should be competent. The truth is that he's just not competent. The piece that I added, which made me nuts, was that he should be competent. The fact is that I'm going to do what I have to do. I'm going to backfill until he's not my problem anymore. I'm just going to do it. By adding that he should be competent, I work myself up into a fucking emotional tizzy. Welcome to New York.
I didn't know you use the F word in New York.
Yeah, we do. Occasionally.
So who would you be without this insane story that argues with reality?
I would just be in the flow and do what I have to do in my job.
Who would you be standing with this man at work without the story?
I would be compassionate and effective.
Yes. Frank should be competent. Turn it around.
Frank should not be competent.
You've got it. Not until he is. That's reality for now. There's another turnaround.
I should be competent. That is true.
Let's look at statement number 2 on your worksheet.
I want Frank to take responsibility for his part of the project.
Turn it around.
I want me to take responsibility for my part of the project.
Yes, because until you stop focusing on his incompetence, you're not taking full responsibility for the project.
And I should take responsibility for his part of the project.
Yes, if you want the job done with competence, and there's no other way. Okay, let's go on to the next statement.
He should step up to the plate as an expert in his field and as a project leader.
Is that true? I mean, where would the man even get the ability? Hey, you, the one with no competence, you should step up to the plate.
No, it's insanity. I'm with you. He just does what he does.
How do you treat Frank when you believe that fantasy?
I turn into a tough guy. I think he has to get it done quicker, and I'm all over him.
Not very effective. Can you see a reason to drop the thought?
Absolutely.
So let's turn it around.
I should step up to the plate as an expert in my field. I'll just step up. It's got to be done.
He's the expert who brings you to the highest level of competence in your life. No mistake.
Yes, he's my teacher. I can feel that.
Good. Let's move on to your 4th statement.
I need him to carry his portion of the project. And I see now that I don't really need that.
Hopeless?
Absolutely hopeless. I need me to carry his portion and my portion of the project if I want it done.
Let's look at the next statement.
Frank is incompetent.
Turn it around.
I am incompetent.
In the moment that you see him as incompetent, you're incompetent. He's perfectly competent for what he was supposed to bring you, and that was clarity. That's what he brought. And he may bring more, who knows?
I don't really feel that turnaround. I think I'm very competent.
Just not where he's concerned. You weren't competent enough to see that he's not supposed to be competent.
That I agree with. That's my incompetence. He needs to be watched even though he is very senior. I need to watch over myself. That's truer. I can be insane sometimes.
You found the internal world. When you see that it's only your thinking that you need to work with, Then every problem you experience in the world becomes a joy to bring to inquiry. For people who really want to know the truth, this work is checkmate.
I got stuck when I tried to do this myself earlier in the week. I thought I was right. Once I bring it all inside, then all the turnarounds start to make sense.
The guy walks in, you put your story onto him, and you call your suffering his fault. You believe your story and live in the stressful fantasy that he is the problem. Without the thought that this man should be more competent than he is, it might come to you to fire him. If you fired him, that would free him to get to a job where he is competent. Then he could be competent where he's needed. And now there's space for the man or woman who does belong in the position with you. 2 weeks later, the guy may call you and say, "Thank you for firing me. I hated working with you, and I love my new job." Anything is possible. Or it could be that because you've done this inner work and gotten clear about your thinking, you may look at the guy on Monday morning and see a competence that you never noticed before. Okay, read the last statement of your worksheet.
I don't ever want to have him or a person like him on my team.
Turn it around.
I am willing to have him or a person like him on my team. And I look forward to having him or a person like him on my team because it brings me into my inner space to find the solution.
You do this very well. Welcome to the work. Uncle Ralph and his stock tips. The following dialogue demonstrates that even though someone is passionately attached to his own story, and therefore to his own suffering, he may still break free if he's willing to go through the whole inquiry with patience. Even if, as Marty points out, the exercise seems only mental for a long time, it can suddenly make sense on a far deeper level. I love not rushing the process. Mind doesn't shift until it does. And when it does shift, it's right on time, not 1 second too late or too soon. People are just like seeds waiting to sprout. We can't be pushed ahead of our own understanding. To benefit from this dialogue, you don't need to understand the technical issues Marty is talking about. All you need to know is that his stock went up and then way down, and that his emotions went with it.
I'm angry at my Uncle Ralph for giving me some bum tips on the stock market that cost me all my money. I got indebted to him when he bailed me out on some margin calls, some stocks I borrowed money to buy, and the stocks continued to tumble. And the other stock tip, his big tip, lost 85% of its value in 2 years, and my uncle is in an unconscious pissing contest with me.
Yes.
He's always trying to prove that he's better than everyone, by the size of his bank account, and he happens to be a wealthy man, so he didn't have to borrow anything. I had to borrow when the one stock was going down and the other stock was doing well to have any chance of being able to pay him back all the money that he lent me.
I hear it.
And so I kept building up a debt to him. And then recently, this has been going on for 2.5 years, it just came to a head. I finally told him, when his other stock went way, way down, I said, "You know, Ralph, now that they've both tanked, I've lost all my money and some of your money." At which point he said, "Listen, you motherfucker, I told you to not borrow and you borrowed. You betrayed me. You went against me. You did this, you did that." And I only got in one word edgewise, which was, "Ralph, I needed to buy your other stock and I just didn't have the money." But I didn't say why I needed to buy it, which was to have some hope of paying him back. And I also wanted to make some money. I mean, my own fear and greed went in there too, but...
Sweetheart, just read what you wrote. It's important that you read what you wrote, not narrate a story.
Okay, I'm sorry. I want Uncle Ralph to bail me out, give me back the $60,000 I started with, plus the other $35,000 that I'm due, to pay off my credit card debts and take responsibility for having incorrect information and for causing me and my family these financial losses.
Good. Keep reading.
Uncle Ralph should pay off my debts and give me $100,000. He shouldn't demand his money from me because I can't pay. I need Uncle Ralph to bail my ass out from financial ruin. I need him to take responsibility and at least try to get along with me as responsible adults for what we both did. Ralph is a demanding, controlling, possibly vindictive person who is not interested in the truth as much as he is in proving that he is always right and highly intelligent. Okay, the last one?
Yes.
I don't ever want to listen to his stock tips or owe him money again, or take his petty, irate, childish shit.
Yes. Good. Well done. Okay, sweetheart, would you read the first statement again, just the way you wrote it?
Okay. I'm angry at my Uncle Ralph for giving me some bum tips on the stock market that cost me all my money, some of his, and threatens me with... I can't read my writing.
Okay, so let's stop there. He gave you the tip.
Uh-huh.
Okay, if I offer you this cup, you don't have to take it. It's up to you whether you take it or not. And there's no right or wrong here. Uncle should not give nephews tips on the stock market. Is it true? What's the reality of it, do they?
Well, he wanted me to make money, and that's why he gave me the tips.
So what's the reality of it? He gave them to you.
He gave them to me, and I took them, and I played them to the hilt. It got my ass in a sling.
We all know up front that stock tips are risky, but knowing that doesn't keep us from acting on them. And realizing what we've done is scary sometimes, at 2 o'clock in the morning or at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Some of us end up jumping out of buildings. So, Uncle shouldn't give nephews bum tips, is it true?
Yes, right. It's true.
And what's the reality of it, do they?
Yes. My uncle gave me a bum tip, and he doesn't admit that it was a bum tip.
Okay. Uncles are supposed to admit their errors. Is that true?
Yes, you damn tootin'. Uncles are supposed to admit their errors.
And what's the reality of it? What's your experience with it?
He forced all the blame on me, and that...
So your experience is no, they don't admit their errors.
That's right.
So is it true that uncles should admit their errors?
I think it's true that all people should admit their errors.
Oh, well. And what's the reality of it? Do they always? Is it true that uncles should admit their errors?
Yes.
And what's the reality of it?
He's not doing it.
He's not doing it. So I ask you, on what planet is this supposed to happen? Is it true that people should admit their errors? No, not until they do. I'm not asking for morality here. I'm just asking for the simple truth.
But just let me say that I really try to admit my own errors. And what's more, in the action that I'm taking, in sending him all my money and assets, I'm admitting my errors by my actions.
You are. I live the way you do.
I hope not.
I like myself when I take responsibility for my actions. But people should admit their errors? Is it true? No. How do we know that people are not supposed to admit their errors?
Because they don't.
They don't. This is so simple, sweetheart, that we've been missing it for thousands of years. It's the truth that set me free. If you argue with it, you lose. I'm a lover of reality, not because I'm some sort of spiritual being, but because when I argue with it, I lose inside myself. I lose the contact with the place inside that is home. How do you react when you think the thought that he should admit his errors and he doesn't?
I feel victimized.
What else? How does it feel inside?
I feel pain, sadness, rage, fear.
Separation?
Yes, all the bad stuff.
The reason you feel all this turmoil is that you're stuck in the center of a lie. It's not true that he should admit his errors. That's the lie. The world has been teaching this lie for centuries. And if you're tired of the pain, it's time to notice what's true. It's not true that people should admit their errors yet. This is a tough one for some of us, and I invite you to go there. This work demands absolute, simple, pure integrity. That's all, and the willingness to hear the truth. It would be much better for you if he admitted his error and gave your money back. Your highest spiritual path, your greatest freedom, would be if he admitted his error and gave your money back. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
That would be my highest spiritual path?
Yes. Just a yes or no. Can you absolutely know that it's true?
I don't know.
That was my experience, too. I can't know if that's true.
You know, well, let's put it this way. I could say yes, and then I'd feel a sense of justice, but I don't know that justice is necessarily the same thing as peace.
I agree. Justice isn't the same as peace. I don't care about justice. I care about your freedom, the truth inside you that can set you free. This is the ultimate justice.
No, I know. I'm talking about divine justice. I'm saying that the truthful thing would be to really sit down as two grown men and look where... Because I made mistakes, too.
He should sit down with you. Is that true?
Yes, definitely. True.
What's the reality of it?
He ain't.
He ain't? It's not happening.
Right.
So how do you react when you think the thought that he should sit down with you like a grown man and he doesn't?
Well, I feel that I've been wronged, and I feel righteous, and I feel like shit.
Yes, that's the result. So it's not that he's not sitting down with you that hurts. It's your believing the thought that he...
That he should.
That he should. So just be there a minute. See if you can locate that. Who would you be without the story that he should sit down with you like a grown man, or that he should admit his error and apologize? Who would you be without that story? I'm not asking you to drop your story. I'm simply asking, who would you be in your daily life today without that story?
I know I'd be free of any expectations from him.
Yes.
Which, I guess, would make me more whole within myself.
Yes.
But, you know, I...
Notice how you're about to go into your story when you say but. Just be still with it.
I really don't know how it would feel.
That's right, sweetheart. We're so used to holding on to the lie about what's really happening that we don't know how to live freely. And some of us are learning how, because the pain is just too great not to learn. In my experience, when I don't hold on to the story, I get up, brush my teeth, have breakfast, do what I do all day, come here, and do all the same things, but without the stress, without the hell.
Sounds great. And, you know, as fleeting as it may have been, I have had a taste of the free state, so I know that state, and I would certainly like to live that way. That's why I'm here.
So read that part again.
Okay, the first part. Now I'm able to read my writing. I'm angry at my Uncle Ralph for giving me some bum tips on the stock market that cost me all my money.
So now we're going to do what we call a turnaround. The work is judge your neighbor, write it down, ask four questions, turn it around. That's it. Simple stuff. So now we're at the point where we're going to turn it around. I'm angry at myself.
I'm angry at myself.
For taking. He gave, you took.
For taking his stock tips and believing him.
Yes, that's close. Keep it very simple. Now read it again and read it just the way you wrote it. I'm angry at myself.
I'm angry at myself for giving me?
Yes, honey.
Oh, I'm angry at myself for giving me some bum tips on the stock market that cost me all my money?
Yes. You gave them to yourself.
I see that. I gave the tips to myself by accepting them from him.
Exactly. He can't give them to you.